Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Susan Yawkey reporting. Obama to address terrorism. U.S. President Barack Obama will focus on his top priority, keeping Americans safe, as he gives a rare address today from the White House Oval Office. With a preview is VOA's Ken Bredemeyer.
It's a very significant moment in American history. This attack in California last week is possibly the worst since 9/11. And the president wants to talk about the broader threat of terrorism, but also how the country intends to combat it, at the same time adhering to its commitment to justice, equality, and freedom. It is a moment when a lot of Americans are very afraid of what they see as being overtaken by Islamic State terrorists or their sympathizers.
The Federal Bureau of Investigation continues to investigate what led to U.S.-born Saeed Rizwan Farooq and his Pakistani wife, Tashfeen Malik, killing 14 people and wounding 21 at a gathering of local government workers. The Islamic State group claimed responsibility for an explosion today in southern Yemen that killed the governor of Aden province and several of his bodyguards. The blast hit Governor Ghaffar Mohammed Saad's convoy as he traveled to his office in Aden City. Aden has been a key battleground in Yemen, where Houthi rebels took control of the capital, Sana'a, last year, before sweeping into Aden and forcing President Abd Rabbuh Mansur Hadi to flee to Saudi Arabia. Pro-Hadi forces backed by Saudi-led airstrikes later pushed the Houthis out of Aden. This is, from Washington, VOA News. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has criticized Britain's entrance into the U.S.-led coalition attacking Islamic State militants in Syria, saying the airstrikes are illegal and will fail. In an interview published in Britain's Sunday Times, Assad said Islamic State cannot be defeated by airstrikes alone. Afghanistan's Taliban has released a voice message which it said was from its supreme leader, Mullah Akhtar Mansour. As Ayaz Gul reports from Islamabad, in the message, Mansour refuted claims he was killed in a gun battle earlier this week.
Addressing his followers in Pashto, one of the two languages spoken in Afghanistan, he repeatedly asserted that reports of his death in a shootout were unfounded. Mansour said no such incident ever took place and he is safe and healthy. He went on to say that the rumors are part of the enemy propaganda war to create an impression there are rifts in the Taliban leadership and they have turned into deadly infighting. The Afghan government announced Wednesday that Mansour was seriously wounded when gunfire broke out during a meeting of Taliban commanders in neighboring Pakistan. Some officials in Kabul claimed later that the Taliban chief had died of the injuries he suffered in Kuchlak, a small town near the southwestern Pakistani city of Quetta. Ayaz Gul for VOA News, Islamabad.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today rejected U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry's warning that a collapse of the Palestinian Authority could have consequences for the security of Israel. Netanyahu told a cabinet meeting, Israel will not be a binational state, but in order to have peace, the other side needs to decide that it wants peace as well. And unfortunately, this is not what we are witnessing. He added that the Palestinian Authority is continuing incitement against Israel. Kerry's comments came during a forum at the Brookings Institution, where he said both sides need to renew efforts for peace talks. He condemned the months of Palestinian attacks on Israelis, as well as Israel's continued settlement construction on lands envisioned for a Palestinian state. French voters are going to the polls today to elect regional leaders in what is expected to result in gains by a far-right, some consider anti-Islamic party. The election comes as France remains under tight security following the November terrorist attacks in Paris that left 130 people dead. Officials from 195 nations attending the UN Climate Change Conference in Paris have approved a draft text of a climate deal. The draft document, coming after 4 years of negotiations, is meant to offer nations options to reduce the emissions of climate-altering greenhouse gases. Critics say that many unresolved issues remain to be hammered out before the COP21 conference ends. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Douglas Impoga. Peter Clote has the day off.
Crisscross Africa, they would total more than 53,000 kilometers in length, and they just look like a giant spider web laid over the top of Africa.
Is Africa's economic and agricultural development on a collision course with the environment? We'll find out.
We are saying this must stop, and all the public should be aware, should come out and stand for women and stand against violence against women and the young girls.
Hundreds of men in the Ugandan capital Kampala marched to end gender-based violence against women.
23 teenagers on average take their life per day. 10 times more, an average of 230 teenagers, attempt to take their life per day. Now that's a hell of a lot of kids who are troubled.
And we look at a unique foundation formed to combat suicide in South Africa, one of the highest in the world. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. As the United Nations Climate Summit continues in Paris, among the issues on the table is the divide between rich and poor countries, with the poorer, more vulnerable countries saying the wealthy should pay for adaptation to climate change. As VOA's Roseanne Scarborough reports, huge investment projects are speeding ahead in Africa, where economic and agricultural development could be on a collision course with the environment.
The population in Africa is expected to nearly quadruple this century. This creates an unparalleled urgency to produce more food. At the same time, the continent is rapidly opening up to extensive mining, largely driven by foreign money.
Because of all that, there's these gigantic proposals for creating roads, highways, railroads, major projects that are going to penetrate into often remote interior regions of Africa.
William Lawrence is director of the Center for Tropical, Environmental, and Sustainability Science at James Cook University in Australia. He says these development corridors, which on average are between 1,000 and 4,000 kilometers long, would have an enormous impact on the continent.
They crisscross Africa. They would total more than 53,000 kilometers in length, and they just look like a giant spider web laid over the top of Africa.
But he says no overall plan or strategy exists to coordinate the many players, both foreign and domestic. In a study published in the journal Current Biology, Lawrence and his team assessed 33 major projects, either proposed or already underway. The assessment accounts for human population, agricultural potential, and environmental values, including biodiversity, endangered species, and critical habitat for wildlife and vegetation for storing carbon.
There was about six of the projects that looked like they were a pretty good idea, in the sense that they were going to yield a lot of agricultural benefits and not huge environmental costs. And then there was another six that I would take off the board immediately, that we're going to go slice into the heart of some of the most environmentally important areas of Africa, such as the Congo Basin and West African forests and some of the really critical equatorial and sub-equatorial forests of East Africa, places that are amazingly rich in wildlife and environmental resources.
The other projects fit somewhere in the middle. Lawrence advises caution moving forward. He says what may appear to be a great deal up front may turn out to yield unintended consequences. Take, for example, a large mining operation.
Limited numbers of people get really wealthy, and there is some more employment. But oftentimes what you find is there are still large segments of the population that are having to deal with everything suddenly, you know, food, rent, everything's becoming a lot more expensive, and they're not getting much benefit from it at all. So you're actually increasing the economic disparity. You get the pillar of the economy, which is mining, which swells and becomes huge, but the other pillars of the economy, all these other sectors, shrink down and become less and less important.
Lawrence calls for local and national studies that can direct governments to deploy mitigation measures and environmental safeguards that will assure a more positive future.
And if they're not in place, you can get runaway deforestation, you can get huge increases in poaching, you can get giant collapse of wildlife populations, you can get loss of tourism revenue.
Lawrence says the time to act is now, before the projects gain a momentum that will be impossible to slow. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
As the Paris Summit discusses how to mitigate the effects of changing weather patterns on the world's most vulnerable people, it's hoped a universal deal will be agreed there, which will keep global temperature rises below 2 degrees Celsius. Meanwhile, women and children in Africa are more impacted by climate change than men, according to the head of the African Union Commission. Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma is the head of the African Union Commission. UN Radio's Christina Silvero asked her to what extent climate change disproportionately affects women.
If you think that African women are the ones that are charged with looking for water, providing water in the home, if there's no running water, they are charged with providing energy in the house if there's no electricity. They are the majority who work in agriculture. So if there is no water, it's not raining or there's floods, it affects women and children much more. If there is not enough land for agriculture, it means they have to cut the trees. But if they cut the trees, they end up with climate change and droughts, and so their land is not productive. The girls can't go to school because now they have to walk longer distances to look for water and to look for firewood. So it becomes a vicious cycle for them. So indeed, climate change does affect women much more than anybody else.
Are you calling for specific measures in support of African women in climate change?
Yes, I think if we provide electricity, that would be a great contribution to freeing women's time, women's energy from looking for firewood, but also in allowing the environment to regenerate and be more green. If there is water, it means women are freer. If the land is more productive, climate smart agriculture, it means they make more from their crops. So, the measures that you are looking for will impact greatly on women.
That was Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, the head of the African Union Commission. She spoke with UN Radio's Christina Silvero in Paris. Meanwhile, VOA's Kim Lewis is also in Paris for this summit. So, Kim, what are the highlights today?
Well, one of the big things for the people here at the Global Landscape Forum, where I have been all day, was the mention of agriculture and food security in the agreement, because they feel that without these two big factors, really, it would be a failure not to include them, because it means people being able to feed themselves and eliminate poverty and hunger. And one of the people that I spoke with just a bit earlier was, and he's the CEO of CGIAR, the consortium. It's a global research partnership for a food secure future. And what they do, they are a global researcher partnership for a food secure future. And what they did today was they presented various approaches to tackling food security. And this included new initiatives and research to more ambitious initiatives that target the agriculture sector, including land and seascape management proposals.
From what you're gleaning over there in the draft agreement, what is there in there for food security?
Well, what they would like to see is really more commitment regarding agriculture and food security, and they feel it should play a bigger role in this agreement. For example, the French government, they introduced an initiative regarding a carbon reservoir. And what this would do, this would store all of the carbon emissions including which will be good for the environment, good for food security, and it would be also good for the air.
Did they take care or did they consider smallholder farmers who are common across most developing countries like in Africa?
Yes, actually, the CEO that I spoke with today, his focus is on smallholder farmers. And there are so many smallholder farmers. There are over 500 million smallholder farmers. And one thing that he pointed out was that they did not cause this problem of global warming and land degradation. But what he is saying that they are feeling the brunt of the problems because these are the farmers, these are the people that are feeding the world. And in looking at this, he's saying the agriculture and food security, that it was named in the deal, he's saying there should be money available for smallholder farmers so that they can offer them such programs as weather insurance, climate information, varieties of drought and food-resistant crops.
That was VOA's Kim Lewis in Paris. Kim, thanks a lot. Hundreds of men in the Ugandan capital Kampala marched Saturday to end gender-based violence against women. The march is part of the United Nations campaign to end sexual violence against women. Uganda has incredibly high rates of domestic abuse and sexual violence, often justified by both women and men. Elizabeth Pola reports from Kampala on what men in Uganda feel is their role in combating this violence.
At Kampala's Walk a Mile in Her Shoes march, a heavy turnout from Ugandan law enforcement and civil society organizations spread the message of solidarity in stopping violence against women. With a marching band playing, men and women walk through downtown Kampala, some holding signs while a few men wore women's shoes. The march is a project of the U.S.-based nonprofit organization Venture Humanity Incorporated and is sponsored by UN Women, a United Nations organization dedicated to gender equality. As part of the event, men literally walk 1 mile, or approximately 1.5 kilometers, in women's high-heeled shoes to protest sexualized violence, educate their communities, and raise money for chronically underfunded rape crisis centers, women's shelters, and other sexual violence prevention and recovery services. The march comes at a time when violence against women is increasing. Police officials say they have seen an increase in the number of rape and domestic violence cases in recent years. Although this could be attributed to more women reporting assaults, officials say they still find the statistic troubling. The Ugandan Bureau of Statistics estimates that nearly 70% of married women experience violence from their partner. Uganda has harsh laws against domestic violence and rape, but these laws are rarely enforced. According to a 2014 report by the U.S. State Department, while over 1,000 Ugandan women reported rape in 2013, there were only 11 convictions that year. Johnson Akamba, who works with the Youth Advocacy Foundation in Uganda, says men need to speak out so Ugandans can face these issues together.
Violence is something that is growing day by day and is taking roots, and we are losing lives of not just women, but also young girls. Young girls are being violated and their rights being abused in one or the other, and all this is taking place in darkness or in silence. So as men, we are coming out to say this must stop. We are coming out to say that we should have more men supporting their women. Let's come out and show to the public and share with the public and march in a walk a mile in their shoes, put ourselves in their shoes and see what they go through. We are saying this must stop, and all the public should be aware, should come out and stand for women and stand against violence against women and the young girls.
Representatives from UN Women and the White Ribbon Campaign stressed that such violence is preventable and asked the Ugandan police force to help implement anti-violence laws. Representatives of the police force said they are committed to stepping up efforts in their communities. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Malawi has rolled out its first batch of ethanol-fueled cars as the government works to transition the country to a cheaper, greener alternative to imported fuel. For VOA, Lameka Masina reports from Blantyre.
This car and 23 others like it are just normal vehicles, except now they can run on 100% ethanol fuel or gasoline or any mixture of the two in a single tank. The cars called ethanol-driven vehicles or EDVs are the product of a $300,000 government initiative to end Malawi's dependence on imported gasoline. Their engines are fitted with a special U.S. manufactured device to enable fuel flexibility.
This is the conversion kit. It has sensors which determine the proportions of ethanol and petrol passing through, and it will open or close depending on the varying proportions.
Motorists are loving the difference.
It's very efficient because it's a cost-effective fuel, and it's best buy Malawian fuel produced right here in Malawi. And I don't have any problems with it. It works equally as good as petrol, and at least because I can also use petrol, I'm not limited.
Malawi's filling stations currently sell blended fuel, 20% ethanol and 80% gasoline. EDV project facilitators at Preskin Corporation Limited say shifting to 100% ethanol would increase jobs and mean big savings for the government, which currently spends $45 million a month to import fuel.
For example, it can go to facilitate the health sector. It can go to support the education sector. It can go to other sectors which would otherwise demand foreign exchange.
Ethanol is made from plants with a large amount of glucose or starch, like sugarcane or corn. Malawi has just two ethanol factories. Critics say that's not enough to meet demand if filling stations move to 100% ethanol, but the companies say they are ready. Ebo Chanje runs one of them.
We are going to start expanding our factory from 60,000 liters per day, as a matter of fact, next week, to 90,000 liters per day, which is a 50% capacity increase.
For now, Preskin relies largely on molasses from a local subsidiary of Wirovo Group, Africa's biggest sugar producer. But Chanje says the plant has acquired 2,000 hectares of land and is supporting farmers who will grow sugarcane there.
We are hopeful that once we start growing sugarcane, we will be able to build decent houses and find money for school fees, and our lives will be improved.
Malawians are now waiting for the government to set ethanol pump prices, which local producers are proposing be 20% lower than gasoline. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
The World Health Organization says South Africa has the eighth highest suicide rates in the world. And according to the country's depression and anxiety group, there is a suicide every hour in South Africa. It says growing numbers of these casualties are teens. To combat this, a unique foundation has been established, born out of a death that recently shocked South Africa. For VOA, Darren Taylor reports in the second part of a series on people making a difference in the country.
It's quiet inside the bridal store, just the sound of traffic outside, muffled by rows of wedding dresses. A woman with long blonde hair and a black and white patterned dress sorts them. Next to her is a large framed photo of a smiling teenage girl, hands on hips. She stands on a beach in a lemon-colored vest and polka dot shorts, her tanned wrist decorated with multicolored beads.
Clara took her own life on the 11th of August, 2015.
On that afternoon, 14-year-old Clara Gottert didn't return home from school. Her mother, Liesel, phoned her friends and looked at venues where she could have been, like her favorite skateboard park.
So I was running around like a lunatic, looking in all the wrong places for her.
As darkness descended on Johannesburg, Liesel searched her daughter's room for clues about where she might be.
Cause all of me loves all of you.
Clara's current favorite song, All of Me by John Legend, was on repeat on her computer. Unbeknown to her mother, Clara had earlier hitched a ride to a mall north of the city. There she'd climbed the steps to the building's roof.
And it was late at night, she was in trouble, it was dark. She was supposed to be at home. And I think the emotional situation overwhelmed her. And she sat there and fell to her death.
Liesl says her daughter had difficulties common to most teenagers. She was battling with schoolwork and felt rejected by some friends.
Huge fights and small fights, and we disciplined her, and she was sometimes punished for things, but it was nothing that was out of the ordinary or obscene. For her to have done something like this leaves a myriad of questions that is just so hard to answer.
In retrospect, she says, as much as she loved Clara and as much as her daughter's problems seemed normal to her, she failed to realize how depressed Clara was until she read her journals.
And I can see from that that she was overwhelmed by a friend who said something nasty at school, or her brother who teased her, or I punished her. It would probably be easier then to make an erratic decision that doesn't make sense in an unbalanced mental state. And
Liesl has since realized just how easily teenagers exaggerate small problems, because many don't have the life experience necessary to be able to put their worries in context. Clara's death is part of a spate of teenage South Africans committing suicide.
I don't think it's a sudden phenomenon. I think it's something that's been happening for a long time, and it's been underreported and undervalued, and that people don't really talk about it enough as much as they should.
Liesl says police statistics show that teen suicide is an epidemic in the country.
23 teenagers on average take their life per day. 10 times more, an average of 230 teenagers attempt to take their life per day. Now that's a hell of a lot of kids who are troubled.
These figures and her daughter's death have motivated the mother to establish an organization to try to prevent as many teenagers as possible from taking their own lives. Liesl says the Clara Gotthard Foundation plans to coordinate a network of professionals to counsel youngsters and ease their anxieties and depression. It wants to cooperate with other mental health groups, schools, and parents to establish what she calls an early warning system to help teenagers before it's too late.
We'd like to also use it as a referral center to specialists in their field, whether it's social services or the police or psychiatrists or teachers or spiritual leaders or anything like
that. The majority of pupils in South Africa don't get any mental support from the state. The foundation aims to get children talking about their problems at school in various ways.
We'd like to launch and carry competitions for children to write about their experiences, how they can better themselves, how they can grow and develop.
Liesl says the non-profit also plans to help parents who blame themselves for their children's suicides.
As a parent, your sole responsibility is to love and cherish and take care of your children, to protect them from harm, and to feel that you may have failed in that, even if an external situation was at play, is a huge burden that needs to be worked through.
You're my end and my beginning, even when I lose, I'm winning.
But she maintains the foundation's main objective will be to make the government, parents, and teachers aware of the pressures teens are under in modern-day South Africa, and to get them to pay attention to their problems, no matter how small and unimportant they seem. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Even when you're crying, you're beautiful too. The world is beating you down. I'm around through every mood. You're my downfall. You're my...
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. And coming up in the program, sports with Segun Adeyemi from the Nigerian commercial capital, Lagos. Music from our African collection for your listening pleasure and enjoyment. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. But right now it's time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that let's go straight to Lagos and join Segun on the dot Adeyemi. Segun?
Good evening, Africa. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports for Sunday, December 6th. The four semi-finalists at the ongoing 2015 Under-23 Africa Cup of Nations have emerged. They are title holder Nigeria, host Senegal, Algeria, and South Africa. While Nigeria will take on Senegal in the first semi-final on Wednesday, Algeria will tackle South Africa in the second one on the same day. To reach the last four, Nigeria played goalless with Algeria on Saturday in their final group game in Dakar, the Senegalese capital. The results meant that Algeria and Nigeria finished on 5 points each, though the North Africans finished on top of the group based on superior goal differential. Senegal had reached the semi-finals on Friday after beating Zambia by a long goal in their final Group A match. The Senegalese finished on top of the group with a maximum 9 points, having won all the three group games. The Under-23 Africa Cup of Nations doubles as a qualifier for the football event of the 2016 Olympics in Rio, Brazil. The winners of Wednesday's semi-final matches and the winner of the third place match 3 days later will represent Africa at the Olympics. Nigeria head coach Samson Siase has commended his team for reaching the last four. I congratulate my team for not conceding and qualifying for the semi-finals. The most important was to qualify, and we have achieved it, he said after the match against Algeria on Saturday. Siase said he would have preferred to meet Senegal in the final. For his part, Algeria head coach Pierre-André Schaumann said he's glad to finish on top of Group B. I am satisfied with our performance overall and today against a tough opponent like Nigeria. He said, now we will prepare for the match against South Africa. The 2015 Under-23 Africa Cup of Nations is due to end on December 12th with the final and the third place playoff, both in Dakar. In more African football news, Uganda has won the CECAFA Cup title for the fifth time in the last 7 years, beating Rwanda 1-0 in the final of the 2015 edition in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, on Saturday. CECAFA is the Council for East and Central Africa Football Associations. Rwanda coach Johnny McKinstry said the two-week tournament was good preparation for the African Nations Championship or CHAN Finals at home in January. We are all very disappointed, but we will pick ourselves up and move forward into CHAN, the Irish-born coach said. Earlier, host Ethiopia took bronze when it defeated Sudan 5-4 on penalties. Zimbabwe coach Callisto Pasua has named a 32-member squad for the 2016 African Nations Championship due to take place next month in Rwanda. Pasua, who is keen on putting on a good show at the continental tournament, is aware of the challenge that lies ahead in Group D, where his team is drawn alongside Mali, Uganda, and Zambia. Pasua explained that he summoned a large pool of players in case of injuries. The Warriors of Zimbabwe finished fourth at the 2014 edition of the two-yearly tournament in South Africa. Pasua's target next year is to reach the final. The African Nations Championship is designed for footballers playing in the continent's domestic leagues. And now, dear listeners, this will be the last time I will present this show, Nightline Africa Sports. It's been a long 28-year ride since I started off with the Voice of America, but everything that has a beginning must have an end. Before I go, let me thank all those who made those years worthwhile. The list is endless. Barry Mon, former chief of English to Africa, who signed me on in 1987 as an African reporter for the VOA. Current chief of English to Africa, Sonia Lawrence Green. Sonia Pace, who introduced me to Barry Mon. My friend Sonny Young, host of the Sunny Side of Sports, who inherited me from Barry. Uncle Ted Roberts, former host of Nightline Africa, under whom I started hosting this show about 10 years ago. Douglas Umpuga, Peter Clote, Nikki Nicole Lindsay, Cecily Hillary, the energetic Andy Edwards, reporter Tony Tamuno in Nigeria, Cyril Ole at the U.S. Embassy in Nigeria, as well as Andy and Dave at the VOA office in London. Meanwhile, my friend Sonny Young has a few words he'd like to share with us.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. A big shout out for Segun. I think he did a great job with Nightline Africa Sports. When I was in Lagos in October, Segun told me he first started reporting for the VOA in 1987, which makes him one of our longest-serving reporters in Africa. But not to worry, VOA sports fans. I've officially made Segun a life member of the Sunny Side of Sports, so I'm very confident we'll be hearing Segun's voice on our airwaves in the years to come. Best of luck, Segun, in your new job with the Nigerian government, and I'll see you again on the Sunny Side.
Thank you so much, Sunny, for making me a life member of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you for your best wishes, and I'll definitely see you on the Sunny Side in the months and years to come. Finally, my biggest gratitude goes to all the VOA listeners, without whom there would have been no Nightline Africa Sports. On that note, I'm signing out. I'm Segun Adeyemi in Lagos. So long.
Thanks a lot, Segun, and indeed the Nightline Africa team will greatly miss you. You've been a pleasure to work with. All the best, Segun, in your new undertaking. Yes, it's Sunday here on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Explode. a move like a time bomb. Ready for explode. She dey move like a time bomb. She wanna explode. Shorty move like a time bomb. Ready for explode. Time bomb. Time bomb. Time bomb. She wanna explosion. Time bomb. Time bomb. Time bomb. Two man don't come around. I want pretty ladies all around me. That sexy girl with a bad physique. I've never seen a girl like you. 10 to 1, that's the countdown. She's about to explode and can't stop fusion. My girl, she's bad, she's number one. I've never seen a girl like you. That girl,
I tell you she be time bomb. Boom. Don't stop boogie, baby, wine on. Hey, your body, they define them. This guy and boogie, no be minor.
No, no.
This body be designer. Some girl fine, but you fine her. Continue to wind up, cause we never seen a girl like you.
Never let go wine.
Time bomb.
I body fire.
Time bomb.
She my desire.
Time bomb.
She make me lose control.
Explosion.
She sexy but sexy Nina.
Time bomb.
She came with her friend called Sabrina.
Time bomb.
Don't stop sister Nina.
Time bomb.
Baby go low. I just wanna love you. Share with me your problems. Girl, you are the type of girl a bad man need. I just wanna love you. Share with me your problems. Girl, you are the type of girl a bad man feel. Lean on me. My girl, you're the only one for me. You're the only thing I see. Lean on me. Oh, you're the only one for me. You're the only thing I see. Yeah.
Bumper overload. Type of bumper with black road. Just the sight of bumper make you feel so good. My soul food. Me some of the walk out best. Gaska mogu. I make serious, I know they joke. You make man confused, I know if you cope. The machine above me to a means my body. Hey, no between us.
No.
I go direct, make she see, say I mean up. Some romantic arena. I wanna take her to a place where the past is
green.
Time bomb.
My body fire.
Time bomb.
She my desire.
Time bomb.
She make me lose control.
Explosion.
Bring sexy back, sexy Nina.
Time bomb.
She came with her friend called Sabrina.
Time bomb.
Don't stop, sister Nina.
Time bomb.
Baby go low.
Explosion.
Never let her wine.
Time bomb.
My body fire.
Time bomb.
She my desire.
Time bomb.
She make me lose control.
Explosion.
Bring sexy back, sexy Nina.
Time bomb.
She came with her friend called Sabrina.
Time bomb.
Don't stop, sister Nina.
Time bomb.
Baby go low.
Explosion.
Your number one fan, and I dig by do your show. The things where you did display makes me wanna spend my dough. When you take it fast, when you take it slow, baby, you're the baddest, and I hope you know. I know you're upcoming, and I know you blow. Can't you see in the dark you glow? Make you no change, cause I love you so. Can't nobody do me better, 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 better than you. Can't nobody love me better, 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 better than you. This one no be joke, oh. You didn't make me call, oh, yeah. Whether fast or slow-mo, shawty, let me see you. Take it down low, rock this body. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Take it down low, rock this body. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Take it down low, rock this body. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Take it down low, rock, rock this body. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Now you, I come see. I want you to take good care. Me, I didn't like your ways. Now your body and your perfection. Now you didn't make me crazy. Cause I'm loving the things that you wear. Girl, you got a good taste.
There's nowhere else I'd rather be than at your place, yeah. Can't nobody do me better, 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 better than you. Can't nobody love me better, 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 better than you. This one no be joke, oh. You didn't make me cold, oh. Weather pass on slow-mo. Shawty, let me see you. Take it down, oh. Rock this party. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Take it down, oh. Rock this party. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Take it down, oh. Rock this party. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Take it down, oh. Rock this party. Let them know that you don't send nobody. Now you, I come see. I want you to take good care. Make a man hard, but he no be wood. I be hearing stories about how you doing it good. Your sexy moves turn me on, I'm in the mood. I would take you home and make you mine if I could. Let's get faded and lost in the moment. If this you got up for buddy, that's why I wanna own it. You make me wanna spray this cash when you roll it. Pause, now let me remote control it.
Yes, yes, I sincerely hope you enjoyed that music. And that was our Sunday music spot on Nightline Africa from the English service of the Voice of America. Now, let's take a closer look at Africa, one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Take it away, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. China is on the march in Africa. Concerted efforts in some segment of the global media to convince Africa that China has embarked on a neo-colonialism of Africa has failed. It is possible that some Africans have believed that myth, but we must not forget what colonialism was in Africa. European powers had come into that continent, sometimes with some gifts, some arms, small arms, and they have hoodwinked the leaders of Africa, and it is by that means that they occupied almost all of the continents. Colonialism is also a fact that at the Berlin Conference in 1888, European powers sat together with a map without any African presence and partitioned Africa for their colonial rule. China has done nothing of the sort. China has tried since the victory of the Communist Party in China to relate with Africa. And the Chinese have never forgotten the role that Africa played in its gaining of its rightful place in the United Nations in 1971. China has also emerged as a major economic power. And despite resistance by the International Monetary Fund, IMF, last week, the IMF succumbed and agreed to make the Chinese currency renminbi as one of the reserve currency for special drawing rights. This is a major, major victory for China in terms of its economy and finance. It will facilitate its dealing with many countries, particularly in Africa. Shortly after that news was announced by the IMF last week, the president of China, Xi, visited the major country in Africa, Zimbabwe, whose leader has found himself in great hot water with European countries. And after the meeting in Zimbabwe, Xi proceeded to Pretoria in South Africa for the China-African Summit. That summit advanced China's relationship with Africa in the economic and financial sense, and one can say that relationship, which goes back into Bandung in 1955 until the present, has now matured. In the speech by President Xi, he gave a 10-point plan. And that 10-point plan came to a figure of $60 billion credit line that will deal with a whole array of economic matters dealing with infrastructure, with economic assistance, with loan grants. And this will be the basis of the further development in the relationship between China and Africa. Now, it ups to the African countries themselves to see how best they can go forward with this relationship. But there will be attempts, as in the past, to warn some Africans, and some of them may fall into the trap. But what Africans must see is the genuine help of Africa to a continent which is in the field of poverty. China has given the way, and hopefully Africa will learn from China on how it managed to develop its economy and to lift its people out of poverty. I thank you.
And that was One Man Points of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN and Secretary General for Political Affairs. And that's it for this edition of Nightline Africa. From all of us here at Nightline Africa, we wish you a fruitful week. Good evening.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry congratulated the people of Burkina Faso on the election of their first new president in nearly 30 years. Burkina Faso's commitment to a peaceful and transparent election is a model to be emulated, he said. Nearly 3 million voters turned out for the close elections, choosing a new parliament and Roch Marc Christian Kabore, a former prime minister, as president. The long-awaited vote took place despite the many challenges Burkina Faso has faced since 2014. Political conditions have been unsettled in the West African country since former president Blaise Compaoré was forced from office last October amid protests over his plans to cling to power after nearly three decades as president by changing the constitution to run for a third term. The country's interim government was unseated by a short-lived military putsch in September. In October, elections were delayed. Over the past 2 years, the Burkinabe people have repeatedly demonstrated their strong commitment to democracy in the face of adversity and shown that legitimate leadership requires public accountability, said Secretary Kerry. The United States looks forward to working with the government and people of Burkina Faso to advance our strong partnership and to continue to strengthen Burkina Faso's governance, security, and economic institutions.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.